The canyon country of southern Utah and northern Arizona, the Colorado Plateau, is something special. Something strange, marvelous, full of wonders. As far as I know, there's no other region on Earth much like it, or even remotely like it. Nowhere else have we had this lucky combination of vast sedimentary rock formations, exposed to a desert climate, a great plateau carved by major rivers, the Green, the San Juan, the Colorado, into such a surreal land of form and color. Add a few volcanoes, the standing necks of which can still be seen, and cinder cones and lava flows, and at least four separate laccolithic mountain ranges, nicely distributed about the region, and more hills, holes, humps, and hollows, reefs, folds, salt domes, swells, and grubbins, buttes, benches, and mesas, synclines, monoclines, and anticlines than you can ever hope to see and explore in one lifetime, and you begin to arrive at an approximate picture of the plateau's surface appearance. An approximate beginning, a picture framed by sky and time in the world of natural appearances. Despite the best efforts of a small army of writers, painters, photographers, scientists, explorers, Indians, cowboys, and wilderness guides, the landscape of the Colorado Plateau lies still beyond the reach of reasonable words or unreasonable representation. This is a landscape that has to be seen to be believed, and even then, confronted directly by the senses, its strange credulity. Comprehensible, yes. Perhaps nowhere is the basic structure of the Earth's surface so clearly, because so nakedly, revealed. And yet, when all we know about it is said and measured and tabulated, there remains something in the soul of the place, the spirit of the whole, that cannot be fully assimilated by the human imagination. My terminology is far from exact, certainly not scientific. Words like soul and spirit make vague substitutes for a hard effort toward understanding, but I can offer no better. The land here is like a great book or a great symphony. It invites approaches toward comprehension on many levels from all directions. The geologic approach is certainly primary and fundamental, underlying the attitude and outlook that best supports all others, including the insights of poetry and the wisdom of religion. Just as the earth itself forms the indispensable ground for the only kind of life we know, providing the sole sustenance of our minds and bodies, so does empirical truth constitute the foundation of higher truths, if there is such a thing as higher truth. It seems to me that Keats was wrong when he asked rhetorically, "Do not all charms fly at the mere touch of cold philosophy?" The word philosophy, standing in his day for what we now call physical science. But Keats was wrong, I say, because there is more charm in one mere fact, confirmed by test and observation, linked to other facts through coherent theory into a rational system, than in a whole brainful of fancy and fantasy. I see more poetry in a chunk of quartzite than in a make-believe wood nymph, more beauty in the revelations of a verifiable intellectual construction than in whole misty empires of obsolete mythology. The moral I labor toward is that a landscape as splendid as that of the Colorado Plateau can best be understood and given human significance by poets who have their feet planted in concrete data, and by scientists whose heads and hearts have not lost the capacity for wonder. Any good poet, in our age at least, must begin with the scientific view of the world, and any scientist worth listening to must be something of a poet, must possess the ability to communicate to the rest of us his sense of love and wonder at what his work discovers. The canyon country does not always inspire love. To many it appears barren, hostile, repellent, a fearsome land of rock and heat, sand dunes and quicksand, cactus, thornbush, scorpion, rattlesnake, and agoraphobic distances. To those who see our land in that manner, the best reply is, yes, you're right. It is a dangerous and terrible place. Enter at your own risk. Carry water. Avoid the noonday sun. Try to ignore the vultures. Pray frequently. For a few others, the canyon country is worth only what they can dig out of it and haul away, to the mills, to the power plants, to the bank. For more and more of those who now live here, however, the Great Plateau and its canyon wilderness is a treasure best enjoyed through the body and spirit, in situ, as the archaeologists say, not through commercial plunder. It is a regional, national, and international treasure too valuable to be sacrificed for temporary gain, too rare to be withheld from our children. For us, the wilderness and human emptiness of this land is not a source of fear, but the greatest of its attractions. We would guard and defend and save it as a place for all who wish to rediscover the nearly lost pleasures of adventure, adventure not only in the physical sense, but also mental, spiritual, moral, aesthetic, and intellectual adventure, a place for the free. Here you may yet find the elemental freedom to breathe deep of unpoisoned air, to experiment with solitude and stillness, to gaze through 100 miles of untrammeled atmosphere, across Red Rock Canyons, beyond blue mesas, toward the snow-covered peaks of the most distant mountains, to make the discovery of the self in its proud sufficiency, which is not isolation, but an irreplaceable part of the mystery of the whole. Come on in. The earth, like the sun, like the air, belongs to everyone and to no one.